Numbers chapters 3 and 4. We'll see if we get through all of it tonight. It's quite a lengthy section. But as we make our way through the scriptures a few chapters at a time, we get to Numbers chapters 3 and 4. Just to remind you of Numbers 1 and 2, it is all about the numbers. It's somewhat aptly named. It was the counting, remember, in chapter 1 and 2, of all the people of Israel, excluding the tribe of Levi. And there was even a section telling us why they are excluded. We're not counting the tribe of Levi. Everyone else we count, 12 other tribes. Remember, Joseph was two tribes. 12 other tribes, excluding Levi. We count, who did we count? We counted all the males aged 20 and up, able to go to war. And the totals were given for us there. And the placement around the tabernacle was revealed for us, the placement of the 12 tribes, four sets of three tribes each. And verse 33 of chapter 2 ends with, "But the Levites were not listed among the people of Israel as the Lord commanded Moses." And now in chapter 3, we're going to count the Levites. Okay, they're not completely excluded. But the counting is going to work very different. And we're going to make there's going to be some division in the tribe of Levi, three big divisions, but then there's all separate little category within it. And that's what we get to in chapter 3. And chapter 3 begins with these words: "These are the generations of Aaron and Moses." Now that phrase, just that phrase by itself, makes you think of Genesis. Because Genesis's major divisions was, "These are the generations of." And it started all the way from Adam and went through to Jacob. And so it's this little hint back to Genesis. What happened in Genesis? That's where God chose Abraham. And this particular generations that followed from them resulted in Jacob and the 12 tribes of Israel, of which Levi was one, obviously. And I guess it's just a little literary reminder that we're dealing with the God of Genesis. "These are the generations of Aaron and Moses at the time when the Lord spoke with Moses on Mount Sinai." And so they're at Mount Sinai still, so this is a current accounting of a current generation. And it's Aaron and Moses. We just went through all the tribes, tribe by tribe, but now we're not actually thinking of the people listed in Genesis. We're thinking of the people in this generation, Moses and Aaron, right there in front of them. We're going to talk about the generation of Aaron and Moses at the time at Mount Sinai. "These are the names of the sons of Aaron: Nadab the firstborn, and Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar." Four sons: Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar. Their names are important. "These are the names of the sons of Aaron, the anointed priests, whom he ordained to serve as priests. But Nadab and Abihu died before the Lord when they offered unauthorized fire before the Lord in the wilderness of Sinai, and they had no children. So Eleazar and Ithamar served as priests in the lifetime of Aaron, their father." Every time Nadab and Abihu get mentioned, you get reminded of the story recorded in Leviticus 10. His first two sons died because of the wrong worship of the Lord right after they received all the instruction on how to do it right. So remember that story from Leviticus 10. And the reason it's brought up here is not just because it's always brought up. There's a purpose for you to quickly remember, oh yes, Nadab and Abihu, and you file that away, it's going to pop up later again. And so what you have is the generations of Aaron and Moses. Moses and Aaron, we're focusing on Aaron specifically, four sons, but we're only talking about the last two now, Eleazar and Ithamar. And they're serving as priests in the lifetime of Aaron, their father. "And the Lord," verse 5, "spoke to Moses, saying, 'Bring the tribe of Levi near and set them before Aaron the priest, that they may minister to him, that they keep guard over him and over the whole congregation before the tent of meeting as they minister at the tabernacle. They shall guard all the furnishings of the tent of meeting and keep guard over the people of Israel as they minister at the tabernacle. And you shall give the Levites to Aaron and his sons, They are wholly given to him from among the people of Israel. And you shall appoint Aaron and his sons, and they shall guard the priesthood. But if any outsider comes near, he shall be put to death. Let's stop right there. What we're doing now is we started with the generations of Aaron, and we realize there's two sons remaining. And then we're told, now actually zoom out of his family, to the whole tribe he's part of, the tribe of Levi, that we haven't counted yet. Remember in chapter, what was it? End of chapter 1, we were told why they weren't counted. Well, let's count them now. But first you make a distinction. Here are your two big categories first. You have the Levites, and a subset within them, but a distinct group, are the sons of Aaron. And the Levites, we're told, are given to Aaron and his sons. So Aaron and his sons serve under them, given to them to help them, are the Levites, the rest of the tribe. The Levites' task is guard Aaron and his sons and guard the furnishings of the tabernacle. And keep a watch over the congregation, the whole nation. The work of Aaron and his sons are to guard the priesthood very, very narrowly. So you have Aaron and his sons, they take care of the priesthood. Around them then you have all the rest of the Levites, and they kind of guard those who are guarding the priesthood and the furnishings of the tabernacle. That's a distinction here. The priests take care of the priesthood, that's the core ministry. And then you have the Levites here. There's I don't think it's a very tight connection, but I was thinking about it in my preparation. There's perhaps a loose association to New Testament church structure. Like you have the elders who preserve the core ministry of the church, and around them you have the deacons who serve the elders in that way, as you see in Acts chapter 6 and following. Don't make too big a deal of that, but there's similarity, right? All right, so we have Levites, the whole tribe, and the sons of Aaron are extracted from them, special group of priests. Verse 11, and the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, behold, I've taken the Levites from among the people of Israel instead of every firstborn who opens the womb among the people of Israel. The Levites shall be mine, for all the firstborn are mine. On the day that I struck down all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, I consecrated for my own all the firstborn in Israel, both of man and of beast. They shall be mine. I am Yahweh. I am the Lord. Very simple point here is, and it's going to pop up in the next chapter again. When God led Israel out of Egypt, he killed all the firstborn. Unless you had killed a wee lamb and put his blood on the doorpost, then your firstborn did not die. Since that day, God says, here in Israel, all the firstborn are mine. Okay, because you wouldn't have had them. They would have died. But now you have them. They're actually mine. And so we saw some of the laws in the law of Moses of how you redeem the firstborn. Because your firstborn, you wouldn't necessarily send to the tabernacle. That's only the Levites. And so a simple point here is that he took the Levites as a tribe out of Israel because the Levites are going to represent as a nation, as a tribe, all the other firstborn. And so the firstborn from, let's say, Issachar doesn't serve in a temple, as you would normally think. All the firstborn serve in the temple, the tabernacle. The Levites, whether they're actually firstborn or not, they all act as the firstborn. So again, you have this idea, and it's very overt in the text. You have the idea of substitution. That instead of all the firstborn, you have the Levites. And that's true for the people, and it's true for the cattle. You'll see that later, the Levites too. The Levites' men and the Levites' cattle are given instead of the rest of the nation. And so they're mine. They belong to God. And that's a common concept, right, in the kingdom that's being established here by God with his people. You're all mine. And in a special way, the Levites are mine to serve me. And obviously serve the nation too, but focuses on the Lord. Verse 14. And the Lord spoke to Moses, Yahweh spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai, saying, list the sons of Levi. So we're going to count them, right? It's numbers after all. By fathers' houses and by clans, every male from a month old and upward you shall list. So Moses listed them according to the word of Yahweh as he was commanded. We have to stop here just quickly before we now get to a list. We're counting a different by different criteria, aren't we? The tribes, the other tribes, were counted every male 20 years old and upward, able to go to war. Now we're counting from a month old. Okay, the little one. A month old, we're counting, and upward, we're listing. That's all. A month old and upward. Why is it so different? Why is the criterion just a month old year versus the 20-year-old able to go to war? Well, it's not explained for us yet. But the simple concept that distinguishes them is in the tribes, you counted all those who are able to go to war. That was very explicit. And so 20 years old and upwards was kind of the idea. Lots of reasons for that age, but not revealed for us here. Here, we're counting the males, the souls. And so you've got a month after birth, and then you start counting the men. Excuse me. It is about the persons being represented, the souls present. It's like when people ask, how many people are in your church? Pastors ask that question. I'm like, well, we count souls. So the pregnant woman gets counted twice. Okay, because we're ministering to souls. And here the souls are being substituted for the souls in the other tribes. Well, let's start counting now. Verse 17. These were the sons of Levi by their names. Gershon and Kohath and Merari. Literally, his three boys. And these are the names of the sons of Gershon by their clans. So we're talking about the first one here now. Gershon. Libni and Shimei and the sons of Kohath by their clans. Amram, Izhar, Hebron and Uziel. And the sons of Merari by their clans. Mahli and Mushi. These are the clans of the Levites by their father's houses. And then, so just very quickly, you've got the little clans there. Now, to Gershon, again the firstborn, belong the clans of the Libnites and the clan of the Shimeites. These were the clans of the Gershonites. Their listing, according to number of all the males from a month old and upwards, was 7,500. Now, if you compare just quickly, look across the page, you'll see some of the numbers popping out there, verse 19, 21, 23 of chapter 2. The numbers of Levites are very small. And we're counting babies. Okay, it's a much, much smaller tribe. 7,500, verse 23. The clans of the Gershonites were to camp behind the tabernacle on the west, with Eliasaph, the son of Lael, as chief of the father's house of the Gershonites. And the guard duty of the sons of Gershon and the tent of meeting involved the tabernacle, the tent with its coverings, the screen for the entrance of the tent of meeting, the hangings of the court, the screen for the door of the court that is around the tabernacle and the altar and its cords, all the service connected with these. So here's the pattern we're going to see with these three sons of Levi. You've got the son's name and some of his clans that are listed. There's a number that is counted, all the males from 1 month old and upward. Then you're going to see where they're positioned. Remember, the tribes were positioned around the tabernacle, but now the Levites are between the nation, between those tribes and the tabernacle. And so the Gershonites, the first third of the Levites, was at the behind the tabernacle on the west side. So the entrance is on the east. We'll get to that in a moment. So they're behind the tabernacle on the west side, between the tabernacle and the tribes on that side. Then, verse 24, the next part we get is the chief of that whole part of the Levites. His name is Eliasaph. And then, verse 25 and 26, we get their duties. What were the duties of this part of the Levites? Well, their duties was the tent of meeting. So the tabernacle, the tent with its covering, the screen for the entrance, the hangings of the court, the screen for the door of the court that's around the tabernacle and the altar and its courts. All the services connected with those items belong to the Gershonites. You are responsible for the upkeep and especially the transport of that. So that's the Gershonites, the firstborn of Levi. Secondborn is Kohath. Remember verse 17 gives you the three names there. And so verse 27, to Kohath belonged the clan of the Amramites and the clan of the Izharites and the clan of the Hebronites and the clan of the Uzielites. These are the clans of the Kohathites. According to the number of all the males from a month old and upward, there were 8,600, or 300, depending on the textual issue there. We'll talk about it in a moment. 8,600 or 300, keeping guard over the sanctuary. The clans of the sons of Kohath were to camp on the south side of the tabernacle with Elizaphan, the son of Uziel, as chief of the father's house of the clan of the Kohathites. And their guard duty involved the ark, the table, the lampstand, the altars, the vessels of the sanctuary with which the priests minister, and the screen, all the service connected with these. And Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, was to be chief over the chiefs of the Levites and to have oversight of those who kept guard over the sanctuary. Okay, so verse 32, you're like, wait, that's a different verse. It doesn't belong with this group. So we'll talk about that in a moment. But we had the Gershonites, now we have the Kohathites. And they're 8,600 or 300. They are camped on the south side of the tabernacle, so they're on the one side, with the entrance being on the east. And Elizaphan is the chief of the Kohathites, and their guard duty are the actual instruments used by the priests. Not just the tabernacle, broadly speaking, like the Gershonites, the Kohathites are a bit different. They're actually handling the Ark of the Covenant, the altar, the instruments that the priests would use to do their sacrifices. Now, these are not the sons of Aaron. These are not the actual people doing the ministering, but these are the people responsible for the maintenance, upkeep, and transportation of these very, very holy items, set-apart items. And that's why in verse 32, you immediately get told, yes, it's administrative duties, we understand that, but they report directly to Eleazar, the son of Aaron, Aaron's oldest son, after the first two died. Now, later we'll find out the Gershonites and the Merarites also report to a son of Aaron, Ithamar in particular. They both report to Ithamar. But this one immediately gets a mention. Don't worry, they're not going to die when they touch these things, because they do report directly to the priest. The one who would be the next high priest, in fact. And so the Kohathites are a bit special. You'll see in a moment that they get some extra laws as well. Verse 33, to Merari belonged the clan of the Mahlites and the clan of the Mushites. These are the clans of Merari. Their listing, according to the number of all the males from a month old and upward, are 6,200. And the chiefs of their father's house of the clans of Merari was Zuriel, the son of Abihail. They were to camp on the north side of the tabernacle. And the appointed guard duty of the sons of Merari involves the frames of the tabernacle, the bars, the pillars, the bases, and their accessories, all the service connected with these, and the pillars around the court with their bases and pegs and cords. Those who were to camp let's stop right there. And so the Merarites, they're a bit like the Gershonites. The Gershonites take care of all the drapings and stuff. The Merarites take care of all the kind of structural components that are part of that. So if Gershonites and Merarites, Gershonites are at the back of the tabernacle, Merarites on the north side, and they take care of all the logistics of the maintenance of the tabernacle and the transportation thereof when they move around. On the other side, on the south side, you've got the Kohathites, and they report directly to Eleazar, and they take care of all the things inside that the priests deal with. And so you've got the 12 tribes scattered around the tabernacle. Tabernacle's in the middle of the camp, and so four sets of three tribes. But between each of them, there's on the west side, south side, and north side, Levites. Now, the main entrance of the tabernacle is on the east side. That's still left unguarded. And we know the task of the Levites is to guard the tabernacle. But the door is open. Nobody's parked there. Who gets parked there? Well, that's the next verses. Verse 38. Those who were to camp before the tabernacle, it's in the front, on the east side, before the tent of meeting toward the sunrise, in case you forgot where east is, where Moses and Aaron and his sons guarding the sanctuary itself, to protect the people of Israel. And any outsider who came near was to be put to death. All those listed among the Levites, whom Moses and Aaron listed at the commandment of Yahweh by clans, all the males from a month old and upward were 22,000. The point here is, at the entrance on the east side, you had the sons of Moses and Aaron, and Moses and Aaron themselves too. And you think it's to guard the sanctuary, but the wording is the other direction. It's to guard the people. Because if God were to come out of his house, you want somebody standing between you and God. You want a God-appointed somebody mediating for you. So that's why the language is so strong and this placement of the Levites is so particular. You need somebody to protect you from God. And so we got all the laws about the building of the tabernacle. Now we're going to get laws about the management of it. And all of it is exactly God's way so that you never again have a Nadab and Abihu occurrence, where contrary to the clearly revealed will of God, you go do your own thing because you think it's appropriate and right, and that's how you think you should worship God, and God destroy you. And it even says, if outsiders come here to the east side, God is going to kill them, because you need a mediator between you and God. And that's true to our day, isn't it? Christ is our mediator, so that we're not every day consumed when we dare to approach God. No outsider can come near. Now, the outsider here is simply not the sons of Aaron and Moses. It's not a priest. And then you have the number 22,000. Now, this is where the numbers in Numbers actually trip you up. Because if you add 6,200 plus 8,600 plus 7,500, you end up with 22,300. And so this could be a rounding thing where they counted and rounded to 100 and then they added up the total and rounded to 1,000. That's unlikely. We haven't seen that in the previous chapters. And later in this chapter, we're going to see actually down to the very number was an accurate count, because there was a 273 discrepancy later with a different count. And they had a way to deal with the 273 people that were not fitting the pattern. And so I believe 22,000 is down to the very number. So which is it, 2,300 or 22,000? Well, it must be 22,000, not 22,300, because that's what the next paragraph is going to talk about, saying another count was 22,273, and the 273 needs to be fixed. And so we look at the numbers here and say, what happened? Now, it's most likely, it's a textual issue, in verse 28, where it says 8,600, the way you would write the number in Hebrew, if you say 8,600 or 8,300, it's a double letter you place next to each other to indicate 600, and so that one letter just wasn't copied properly. You saw one, you copied it, and you look back, you saw one, so you didn't copy it again. In the meantime, there were two. It's a simple typist error that has popped into a lot of manuscripts, and that's why you've got this discrepancy in number. And so verse 28, the actual count, and the way Moses would have written it, was most likely 8,300, because that makes sense of everything else in any case, though. And it's the most obvious copying error that could have popped in between Moses and our Hebrew manuscripts. The point now is, the Levites have been counted, they have been distinguished from the sons of Aaron, and the Levites have been placed on the three sides of the tabernacle, and the sons of Aaron in the front. The nation, the placement of the tribes, are now safe from a holy God who is in the middle of them. It's this amazing, amazing concept. God is right in the middle of us, the most holy of holy gods. He's in the middle of us. He's close. He's nearby. And it is safe, because of the Levites and specifically the priesthood. Verse 40. Now just file all that away. It's all going to come together just now. Verse 40. And Yahweh said to Moses, list all the firstborn males of the people of Israel. That's why we had to know about the firstborns earlier. From a month old and upward, taking the number of their names. You're like, wait, we just counted all the people. Why are we counting them again? Well, now we're counting from a month old and upward. We're using the Levitical criteria. And remember, the firstborns belong to God. But God is substituting the Levites for them. So the point here is going to be, we need to make sure that the number of firstborns in the tribe, among the tribes, is the same number of Levites. Because it's a one-for-one substitution. And so you have the firstborn males, there's the extra criteria, for the firstborn males, but then the month old and upward we have from the Levitical count. Verse 41, "And you shall take the Levites for me, I am Yahweh, instead of all the firstborn among the people of Israel, and the cattle of the Levites instead of all the firstborn among the cattle of the people of Israel." Now this is almost word for word the same as we saw earlier in, what was it, verse 11, 12, and 13. So we're doing a one-to-one substitution of firstborn males in Israel and the firstborn among the cattle. Verse 42, "So Moses listed all the firstborn among the people of Israel as Yahweh commanded him. And all the firstborn males, according to the number of names from a month old and upward as listed, were 22,273. And like, oh no, there's only 22,000 Levites. We have 273 too many firstborns. What about them? Are they going to just have to join the Levites? How do we work with this? Because they belong to God, but they're not Levites. "And Yahweh spoke to Moses," verse 44, "saying, take the Levites instead of all the firstborn among the people of Israel, and the cattle of the Levites instead of their cattle. The Levites shall be mine, I am Yahweh. And as the redemption price for the 273 of the firstborn of the people of Israel, over and above the number of the male Levites, you shall take 5 shekels per head. You shall take them according to the shekel of the sanctuary, the shekel of 20 gerahs, and give the money to Aaron and his sons as the redemption price for those who are over the count." So Moses took the redemption money from those who were over and above those redeemed by the Levites. From the firstborn of the people of Israel, he took the money, 1,365 shekels, by the shekel of the sanctuary. And Moses gave the redemption money to Aaron and his sons, according to the word of Yahweh, as Yahweh commanded Moses. It would be quite a day. They're at Mount Sinai, arranging the camp, and it's all sorted out now, and the Levites have moved to their spots. Everybody is now in the right position. Tabernacle's been built. And for Moses to say, "Hey, we just finished the count of the Levites, nine of Israel tribes, all firstborn, come here, we've got to count you." So they all show up and they get counted. And then as one gets counted, a Levite steps forward and says, "I'll take his place before God, because you belong to God. But you go work in the fields, I'll minister before the Lord in your place." And next guy gets counted and another Levite substitute. You need a substitute. And then the Levites run out. There's no more Levites, but you still have 273 guys standing there. A month old and upwards, so maybe some babies, who knows what it was. And they then have to pay Aaron and the sons as a redemption price to the Lord. So it's the parents saying, "I will buy my child back from God based on his terms." And so, all the firstborn, none of them died that day. You can imagine number 274 being counted. Well, the 274th last one. He's like, "Yes, I'm not dying today. There's a Levite for me." And then the 273 are like, "What happens to us? Do we die like in Egypt?" No, God provided for the parents to buy them from the Lord, literally. And they could then go back home. They were redeemed, even if not through a Levite. There's a ransom price that was paid. Again, all the heavy salvation terminology, isn't it? All these little pictures the nation of Israel had. The picture so beautifully how God would want to save his people from their sins. Well, you get to chapter 4 then, and Yahweh spoke to Moses and Aaron saying, "Take a census of the son of Kohath." So that was the second son of Levite, right? The one who actually deals with the instruments, the one who the group of Levites who report to Eleazar. "Take a census of the sons of Kohath from among the sons of Levi by their clans and their father houses, from 30 years old up to 50 years old, all who can come on duty to do the work in the tent of meeting. This is the service of the sons of Kohath in the tent of meeting, the most holy things. And so now we're like, oh yes, why was Kohath set apart? I've got that extra Eliezer comment. We're going to talk about that. They're dealing, unlike the other two groups of Levites, they're dealing with the most holy things. Do a special count for them. Now the criteria is not a month old, not even 20 years old, it's 30, and we're cutting it off at 50. And it's still based on ability. It is those who can come to work and actually serve inside the tabernacle. And so they're or taking care of the things inside the tabernacle. They don't go in, just a priest. When the camp is to set out, verse 5, Aaron and his son shall go in and take down the veil of the screen and cover the Ark of the Testimony with it. Then they shall put on it a covering of goatskin and spread on top of that a cloth of all blue and shall put it on poles. And over the table of the bread of the presence they shall spread a cloth of blue and put on it the plates, the dishes for incense, the bowls and the flagons for the drink offering. The regular showbread also shall be on it. Then they shall spread over them a cloth of scarlet and cover the same with a covering of goatskin and shall put on it its poles. And they shall take a cloth of blue and cover the lampstand for the lights with its lamps, its tongs, its trays, and all the vessels for oil with which it is supplied. And they shall put it with all utensils and a covering of goatskin and put it on the carrying frame. And over the golden altar they shall spread a cloth of blue and cover it with covering of goatskin, shall put it on poles, and they shall take all the vessels of the service that are used in the sanctuary and put them on a cloth of blue and cover them with a covering of goatskin and put them on the carrying frame. And they shall take away the ashes from the altar and spread a purple cloth over it. And they shall put on it the utensils of the altar which are used for the service there, the fire pans, the forks, the shovels, the basins, all the utensils of the altar, and they shall spread on it a covering of goatskin and shall put it on poles, in its poles. And when Aaron and his sons have finished covering the sanctuary and all the furnishings of the sanctuary as the camp sets out, after that the sons of Kohath shall come to carry these, but they must not touch these holy things lest they die. These are the things of the tent of meeting the sons of Kohath are to carry. Very, very important. What's the most repeated word here? Covering. Okay, we're covered. So the priest, now it's time to set out. Remember, we saw that in chapter 2, the order in which they travel. You know they're going to be traveling because that's been communicated, the order of travel. You know they're going to end up in war because we're counting men able to go to war. But when you move the tabernacle, you've got a major problem. God is inside the tabernacle. And so you can't just say, hey, people, let's pack up, okay? Who's best at breaking up a tent? Go for it. What you have is the priests would go in, the sons of Aaron would go in. They would cover all the holy things because the priests are the only ones who can handle any of those utensils and everything. They would cover them. Because even while traveling with God in your midst, he's not leaving, you still need something between you and God lest you die. And a point is even made that though the Kohathites are from the tribe of Levi, they still may not touch anything. The priests cover everything. The priests put the poles in. The Kohathites will just pick up poles and move the ark, or move the insides of the tabernacle, all the holy things. And again, it says, lest they die. And now you're like, that's why we were told in chapter 3, don't forget Nadab and Abihu. Okay, remember, they died in the most dramatic way because of disregard for how God says he is to be worshipped. Verse 16, and Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, shall have charge of the oil for the light, the fragrant incense, the regular grain offering, and the anointing oil, with oversight of all tabernacle and all that is in it of the sanctuary and its vessels. Again, the link to Eleazar right away, the report to Eleazar. But Eleazar himself takes care of a few of those items, and they're listed for us. Verse 17, Yahweh spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, let not the tribes of the clan of the Kohathites be destroyed from among the Levites, but deal thus with them, that they may live and not die when they come near the most holy things. Aaron and his son shall go in and appoint them each to the task and to his burden. But they shall not go in to look on the holy things, even for a moment, lest they die. kind of know your job is scary when God says, well, let's make a rule here so that these group of people don't die. And the very simple thing is the Levites deal, or the priests, sons of Aaron, deal with the holy items, prepare them for the sons of Kohath to carry in a safe way. And God gives this extra instruction to Moses and Aaron, says, be very, very sure that the priests don't mess it up, because the Kohathites will die. If they're carrying something and the covering comes off, or if they show up to pick up stuff and the poles aren't prepared and they do it themselves, they will die. Make sure that the priests do their work and so preserve the life of the Kohathites. Verse 21. Yahweh spoke to Moses, saying, take a census of the sons of Gershon also. That's the firstborn again. By their father's houses and by their clans, from 30 years old up to 50 years old, you shall list them. All who can come to duty to do service in the tent of meeting. This is the service of the clans of the Gershonites, in serving and bearing burdens. They shall carry the curtains of the tabernacle, and the tent of meeting with its coverings, and the covering of goatskin that is on top of it, and the screen for the entrance of the tent of meeting, and the hangings of the court, and the screen for the entrance of the gate of the court that is around the tabernacle, and the altar, and their cords, and all the equipment for their service. And they shall do all that needs to be done with regard to them. All the service of the sons of the Gershonites shall be at the command of Aaron and his sons, in all that they are to carry, and in all that they have to do. And you shall assign to their charge all that they are to carry. This is the service of the clans of the sons of the Gershonites in the tent of meeting. And their guard duty is to be under the direction of Ithamar, the son of Aaron the priest. Where we've dealt with the Kohathites, they were the most important, even though he's the second son, because they carry the most holy things. The sons of Gershon carry the next important things, the actual tent and things like that of the tabernacle. It's all explained there. Very important is the criteria. Only men aged 30 to 50 actually do this work. We count them all from a month old for the substitution of the tribes, the firstborn, but only those who actually work are Levites aged 30 to 50. And, very important, they are under the direct oversight and leadership and direction of the sons of Aaron. The priests are the ones they listen to. Because though they're handling the things of God, the earthly things of God, they are still in need of a priest who will stand between God and them. Verse 29 is the sons of Merari. You shall list them by their clans and their father's houses, from 30 years old up to 50 years old. You shall list them, everyone who can come on duty to do the service of the tent of meeting. And this is what they are charged to carry as the whole of their service in the tent of meeting: the frames of the tabernacle with its bars, pillars, and bases, and the pillars around the court with their bases, pegs, and cords, with all the equipment and all their accessories. And you shall list by name the objects that they are required to carry. This is the service of the clans of the sons of Merari, the whole of their service in the tent of meeting, under the direction of Ithamar, the son of Aaron, the priest. So the sons of Aaron, Eleazar and Ithamar. Eleazar takes care of the most holy things. Ithamar takes care of all the rest. And, befitting the name of Numbers for this book, which is a bit arbitrary, but it's cool, Ithamar must have been a master quantity surveyor or accountant or inventory manager or something like that, because he has to list every item. He's like an auditor. Every item. Hey, sons of Merari, you take these four items. You take these three. Because you can't leave anything behind. And you can't take anything common. This is the work of the Levites. And whatever goes has to go with the right tribe or right group within the tribe of Levi. So it's all very meticulous. Why is it meticulous? The more detailed the instructions are, the less chance there is of you doing it wrong. So we look at all the laws in Leviticus and Numbers, and we're like, yo, it's a lot. Like, that was such a comfort to especially the Kohathites. Okay, this guarantees me not serving God wrong and dying because of it. Now, there's a bit of fear of the Lord for us in our modern times, right? Verse 34, and Moses and Aaron and the chiefs of the congregation listed the sons of the Kohathites by their clans and their father's houses from 30 years old up to 50 years old, everyone who could come in for duty, for service, and tent of meeting. And those listed by clans were 2,750. This was the list of the clans of the Kohathites, all who served in the tent of meeting, whom Moses and Aaron listed, according to the commandment of Yahweh by Moses. Those listed are the sons of Gershon by their clans and their father's houses from 30 years old up to 50 years old. Everyone who could come on duty for service in the tent of meeting, those listed by their clans and their father's houses were 2,630. This was the list of the clans of the sons of Gershon, all who served in the tent of meeting, whom Moses and Aaron listed according to the commandment of Yahweh. Those listed of the clans of the sons of Merari by their clans and their father's houses, from 30 years old up to 50 years old, everyone who could come on duty for service in the tent of meeting, those listed by clans, were 3,200. This was the list of the clans of the sons of Merari, whom Moses and Aaron listed according to the commandment of Yahweh by Moses. All those who were listed of the Levites, whom Moses and Aaron and the chiefs of Israel listed by their clans and their father's houses, from 30 years old up to 50 years old, everyone who could come to do the service of ministry and the service of bearing burdens in the tent of meeting, those listed were 8,580. And yes, the math adds up. No textual nonsense here. According to the commandment of Yahweh through Moses, they were listed, each one with his task of serving or carrying. Thus they were listed by him as Yahweh commanded Moses. And this becomes your little summary statement that explains why all this meticulous detail. We finally got the counts, the three sets of counts added up. Very repetitive, like true census style. You literally list the criteria every time for every single count. Why? Because Yahweh commanded them to do that. And the Lord's commandments are detailed. He'll never leave us wondering. And our responsibility is to know every single one of God's commandments so that you don't break any of them. Because if you break one of them, God is going to come out of his tent, out of his dwelling place. And he is holy and he's in the middle of you. And he's going to come out and he's going to destroy you. But before he gets to you, there are going to be the priests who intercede for you. And therefore, there's forgiveness of sins from the holy God for you who broke his commandments simply because you didn't know it, or simply because you disregarded it, or simply because you didn't pay attention. Doesn't matter. If you sin, you die. Because God is holy and he's made it very clear who he is. The only way you don't die is if there's a priest standing between you and God. And now you're very grateful, New Testament believer, New Covenant believer. You're very grateful for your priest. You still have a priest, and he's standing between you and God. He himself is God, but he has fulfilled all righteousness. And like the Levites, compared to the rest of the nation, he is your substitute. You don't have to give your life to God as a payment for yourself. There's a substitute who gave his life as a payment for you. And he was perfectly righteous. He did just as the Lord commanded. And so, as we make our way through Numbers, we realize the numbers are just an excuse to make us realize how amazing God is in accepting worshipers. Let's pray. Our Heavenly Father, thank you for the commandments you have given us. We don't have to lift poles and move bases or camp on a certain side of the tabernacle. But Father, we definitely are serving the same God. And you've given us commandments. And even today, perhaps, no doubt, we've broken some of them. So thank you for our substitute. And thank you that he was perfectly righteous. Thank you. That though you are holy, and though you are in the midst of us, we are not consumed. But we can walk in newness of life. We can walk in obedience. We can walk with a spring in our step, knowing that we know you. And you've given us everything we need to know you. We do not live in fear, wondering if we're obeying or disobeying. We're not like those serving false gods, trying to appease you, but not sure if we are. we know that we're fully accepted before you because of our priest. We praise you, therefore, in the name of Jesus Christ.